Are the New Testament Gospels reliable historical documents? How can a loving God allow evil in the world? You'll find answers to these questions in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, Making the Case for Christianity, Responding to Modern Objections. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Making the Case for Christianity.
There's been a rise in Calvinism, for sure. And I think the return to the doctrines of grace or Reformed theology is really a desire to return to more foundational truths.
Calvinism is probably about as countercultural as anything you could imagine in a secular America or secularizing America. Because Calvinism, just by its very nature, gets right to the reality of the one true and living God.
I think there are still people who worry that someday the Southern Baptist Convention could split over this issue. So that continues to be one of the tension lines in the Southern Baptist Convention.
That's Pastor Daniel Montgomery of Sojourn Community Church, a Baptist church in Louisville, Kentucky, along with regular guests on the program, Dr. Albert Moeller of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and Stephen Lemke, who's provost of the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. What they're talking about there in that excerpt from a feature Sunday on PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly is the so-called New Calvinism. Now, the Calvinism is old, but it's new to many Southern Baptist congregations. They're theologians, they're seminaries, they're congregations, 16 million of them strong, not all 16 million affected, are witnessing something theologically in that the largest Protestant church body in the U.S. that is, well, maybe it isn't unprecedented, but I guess you got to ask the question, is traditional Southern Baptist theology, you know, Billy Graham style theology more or less, is it compatible with traditional Calvinism? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Pastor Jordan Cooper will join us to talk about Calvinism and the Southern Baptist congregations here in the first half hour of the program. A little bit later, Dr. Paul Meyer joins us. There's a reported discovery of a Canaanite fortress, a very ancient Canaanite fortress, almost 4,000 years old, the archaeologists are estimating, in Old Jerusalem. We'll talk about that discovery with Dr. Paul Meyer. Dr. Danny Faulkner joins us after that. We'll review the fifth episode of the TV series Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey. Also, we'll get his reaction to a recent St. Louis Post-Dispatch column titled Faith and Science Can Work Together for a Change. And in the column, as long as faith is willing to concede everything to science, so then they can work together. We'll see what he thinks about that. Then Greg Kokel, founder and president of Stand to Reason, will join us. We'll talk about the story coming out of last week, the resignation of Mozilla's CEO over his support for California's Prop 8 supporting natural marriage. What has become of tolerance in corporate America? We'll answer that question in the last half hour of the program. Now, you can join us for the next 2 hours. Our call in number 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Joining us to talk about Calvinism and the Southern Baptist congregations at the Southern Baptist Convention, Pastor Jordan Cooper. He's a convert from Calvinism to Lutheranism, pastor of Hope Lutheran Church in Brighton, Iowa, and he's host of a weekly podcast called Just and Sinner. Jordan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on again, Todd.
Well, first of all, let's see whether or not we're talking about something that can happen easily. Is traditional Baptist theology, is it compatible with traditional Calvinist theology?
Yeah, well, I guess that depends on what you mean by traditional Baptist theology and what you mean by Calvinist theology. Traditionally, Baptists historically came from the Puritans, who were a Reformed or Calvinistic group. And so there certainly are Calvinistic roots even in the Baptist movement in general back in England. Usually they were referred to historically as particular Baptists as opposed to those who believed in a universal atonement. They believed in a particular or a limited atonement. So when we're talking about Calvinism in the sense that, you know, the term New Calvinism is used, we're speaking specifically about one aspect of Reformed theology. And that one aspect of Reformed theology that people usually mean by the term Calvinism is the 5 points. So the doctrines of predestination, a double predestination, a limited atonement, irresistible grace. So all of that is what's labeled Calvinism today when we're having these kinds of discussions. But historically, the term has been a lot more specific than just talking about those issues. But traditional Baptist theology, I think, is consistent with Calvinism historically. But what we think of as Baptist theology today really is more coming from a revivalistic kind of thing that really developed in the 19th into the 20th century. So if we're talking about that kind of Baptist theology, which generally has been framing the Southern Baptist Convention since the time of Billy Graham, then those two things are not compatible.
Well, both of us have mentioned Billy Graham here. Talk about the significance of he's not in the old revival. He's kind of more in the 20th century revival tradition. But how significant has his preaching, his books, his way of thinking about being a Christian altogether, how influential has it been in the Southern Baptist Convention among Baptists generally?
Sure. Billy Graham's a very influential figure. Now, if you go before Billy Graham, the first revivalist movements were worse theologically even than Billy Graham is. They were more focused on free will with people like Charles Finney. And Billy Graham picked up a lot of that revivalist theology that was not good, I don't think was biblical, and then he kind of brought it toward a little closer to normal orthodoxy, I guess you would say. So you have in Billy Graham a theology that talks about sin, it talks about grace, but then it's kind of blended with this revivalistic kind of idea that we have a decision that we need to make for Christ. So, you know, Billy Graham has a book called How to Be Born Again, because it's up to us to be born again. It's up to our choice. And that that really has permeated not just the Southern Baptist Convention, and it's not just Billy Graham either. It's the whole movement that he's kind of the main representative of. But that has really affected the way that American Christianity in general has looked at things.
So is that the main kind of point of friction when we find Calvinism making or maybe remaking inroads into Baptist congregations, Baptist seminaries and institutions? Is it conversion? Is that the main point of friction?
I think conversion is the main issue. And conversion is the main issue because a lot of Baptist theology and practice has in America been focused on getting people to make some kind of a personal decision for Jesus. And so you have altar calls, you have this free will decisional theology that we have to decide to become Christians. We have to decide to accept Jesus in our heart. And so if people are coming from a Calvinistic perspective, they're saying, no, you don't actually have the free will to choose God. You don't actually have the free will to accept Jesus, but God has to do work within you first, because you're totally depraved. And so this gets at a real practical issue because it's challenging the way that Southern Baptists have just done ministry for so many years.
So paint a picture for us. This is obviously hypothetical, but I think you've got enough kind of view of both past and present to do it for us. What happens to a traditionally Southern Baptist? I'm here talking about typical, not traditional, typical Southern Baptist convention where part of Sunday morning has been an altar call, has been a explicit call for a decision. If you haven't made one, if you want to reaffirm your decision that you made long ago, what happens to that congregation when they get a Calvinist pastor?
Well, what happens is they have to change their whole practice. I mean, if the pastor teaches well and he's trying to lead the people into a view of conversion that's not this decisional theology kind of a thing, it's going to have to affect how the church does these things. It's going to affect how the church does evangelism. It's going to affect how the church preaches, how they teach, the way they structure their service, because their service is cannot any longer be structured on trying to kind of emotionally manipulate people so that they make this decision. So really, it's going to change everything, absolutely everything about the church, which is why this is such a debated issue. It's such a divisive issue because it really is not just some theoretical, theological debate, but it really is getting to the heart of practical ministry.
As you have watched this happen, Pastor Cooper, we've watched it find its way into not just the institutions. It's not just a professor here or there at, say, a prominent Baptist seminary or college. But in fact, in many cases, with the example of, say, Albert Mohler, who is, you know, a friend and a guest on the program, we're talking about not just the president of one of the more influential seminaries, but in fact, a national figure in his own right apart from that position. How important has that been for kind of the movement of Calvinism into Baptist circles?
I think that Albert Mohler has probably been the most important figure in terms of the Southern Baptist Convention in promoting Calvinistic theology. There certainly have been other leaders, too. There's a large number of leaders, but I think he kind of is kind of the forerunner of all this because he kind of gained influence and he started talking about these issues quite a few years before they really came to the forefront. So I think he kind of led this movement, but then there were a lot of other people that followed.
We talked about conversion, but it's certainly not the only issue that kind of the typical Baptists have with Calvinism. The other one mentioned in the PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly story is it's related. It's predestination and a rather complex disagreement there. How have the Southern Baptist seminaries handled the differences on things as fundamental as free will, conversion, predestination? How do they do it?
Well, what I've seen in the seminaries is the seminaries tend to be kind of divided along these lines. So most of those who are Calvinists teach together, and most of those who are against Calvinism teach together. And they kind of stick to their own in that way. So I knew some people who were Southern Baptists, and they had to decide, am I a Calvinist or am I not a Calvinist? And that was kind of going to be the deciding factor in what seminary they would attend. So really, it's not... And this may be the case at some of the schools, but from what I've seen, it seems like there aren't really seminaries that have both perspectives represented equally.
We're talking with Pastor Jordan Cooper, a convert from Calvinism to Lutheranism, pastor of Hope Lutheran Church in Brighton, Iowa, and host of a weekly podcast called Just and Sinner about Calvinism and Southern Baptist congregations on this Tuesday afternoon, April the 8th. We'll be right back.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Grace, faith, scripture, and Christ alone. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Folks attending last year's Making the Case conference absolutely loved the barbecue from Randy's House of Barbecue in Troy and Highland, Illinois. The pork, chicken, ribs, and beef are prepared just like the old days in a pit cooked over hickory, apple, and wild cherry wood. Randy's House of Barbecue, Route 40 and Troy O'Fallon Road in Troy, and at 2649 Northtown Way in Highland. Randy's House of Barbecue, randysbbq.com.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Now, if you appreciate Issues Etc., please consider making a tax-deductible gift today. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Sometimes we worry that the emphasis on wrath or righteousness seems to be overriding the statement that's very clear in Scripture that God is love. And He does allow human response to play a role, and we are accountable for our choices.
I think we should see this as a tremendous achievement of the Southern Baptist Convention. The question is now how we steward that.
As Dr. Albert Moeller and Dr. Stephen Lemke, they are leaders respectively of two different Baptist seminaries, one Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, the other New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, that really are teaching two different kind of theology. One, the typical Baptist theology, kind of Billy Graham theology, you heard it there. The other, in fact, is what's being called the New Calvinism. Pastor Jordan Cooper is our guest. We're talking about this move among Southern Baptist congregations. Pastor Cooper, it's being called the New Calvinism. How, and I'm wondering about that, if you could explain, is this kind of Calvinism that's finding its way into Baptist circles now different from the historic Calvinism that was, as you said earlier in our conversation, part of the roots of the Baptist tradition?
Yeah, I think that that's an important question to ask. And there's been a lot of discussion on this point recently. John Piper, who's kind of one of the biggest representatives, if not the biggest representative, of what's known as the New Calvinism, he recently spoke at Westminster Seminary, which represents the old Calvinism, Philadelphia. And so since he gave a lecture on the New Calvinism and kind of outlining the differences, and there's been a lot of discussion on that point since. So the past, month or so, there's been a lot of dialogue on blogs and programs, podcasts and other media about this subject. So it's important to make this distinction, because the New Calvinism is focused primarily on one thing, and that is the five points of Calvinism. So the doctrines of predestination and limited atonement. That's kind of the center of what defines the New Calvinism. But historically, Calvinism is a Reformed theology generally. We're talking about the old Calvinism. It's a much more comprehensive system. So part of that is the doctrine of predestination, limited atonement, but there's so much more that goes into that. So there's a unique idea of how worship is done, how you view the sacraments, and all of these kinds of things. And this all plays into historic Reformed theology. So even if you look at the older Reformed Baptists who hold to what's called the 1689 London Baptist Confession of Faith, if you look at that Confession of Faith and you look at what it says about baptism and you look at what it says about the Lord's Supper, it's going to be very different than what you see in modern Baptist confession. So the Baptist faith and message is the confession that the Southern Baptist Convention holds to. And if you look at the Baptist faith and message, if you look at the section on baptism and the Lord's Supper, the only emphasis is going to be these things are works that we do for God as symbols of what God has done for us. But if you look at the 1689 London Baptist Confession, you find something very different. You find some kind of idea that the sacraments are not only things that we do for God, but they're also means of grace in some sense. Now, that doesn't mean that it goes to the extent that we would hold to it as Lutherans, but that's a really important distinction to make, I think, between the old and the new Calvinism.
Is this positive? I mean, having come out of Calvinism into Lutheranism, I have generally seen, and maybe I'm doing it out of ignorance, perhaps, that the encroachment of Calvinism into Baptist circles has been positive. I think it's made their theology more robust, although I disagree with major portions of it. One of the most positive things I've seen there, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, is that there's a move toward kind of a more confessional Christianity, a creedal Christianity that, well, to be quite honest, growing up in the Bible Belt, you couldn't get a Baptist to say a creed back in the day, if you lit a fire under him.
Yeah. I think that it is largely a positive movement. It's very positive in a lot of ways. It's positive because this is a way that people who are raised in churches where there hasn't been a lot of real theological or biblical teaching are really starting to think through these issues. They're starting to actually care what Scripture teaches, what the historic church has taught, and they're really, digging their teeth into some real deep theology. And they're moving away from this emotionally driven kind of decisionist theology, and they're moving toward a theology that is more confessional, more focused on grace, much more robust, as you said. So it is largely a positive movement. Now, of course, we wouldn't agree with everything that Calvinism teaches, certainly. So you know, it's kind of, for a lot of people, it's one step on the way to something else. And I say that because I know a lot of people that have come from, you know, the Baptist movement. They've gone into this new Calvinism, and then they haven't stopped there. They've said, now that I've kind of starting to sink my teeth into this theology, then they go out and look and maybe end up in a confessional Lutheran church. So I think this actually is kind of a step in our direction. We just got to keep people pushing this way, because that's kind of the direction I went, was from the new Calvinism to confessional Presbyterianism and then to confessional Lutheranism.
You mentioned the Baptist faith and message probably about a decade ago when they were forging this, attempting to get congregations to just in some very simple way even agree that it exists, if not affirm everything. And it's very difficult to do when you got 16 million Baptists in Southern Baptists in the United States and a loose confederation that can only be called a convention. But is part of the reason it was so hard to get something like that as an official statement because of the Baptist phobia of confessions and creeds?
Yeah, I think so. There's so much diversity within Baptist churches that it's hard for them to pin anything down, because there aren't a lot of hard theological stances. And so anytime you want to make any kind of confession of faith, I think there's going to be some kind of reaction to that, that there's some kind of agenda trying to push maybe us toward believing this thing or falling into that camp. So they just kind of try to avoid often the confessions altogether.
In your experience, does the new Calvinism have a particular appeal to younger people?
It does. It has a big appeal to younger people, and that's why they call it, you know, the young, restless, and reformed movement, because a lot of young people have grown up in churches that don't really have any theological foundation. There's no real solid teaching of Scripture. There's no real solid theology. Everything is just emotionally based. And younger people are looking for something that's more substantive, something that they can really sink their teeth into, something that they can really hold on to, and they just don't find that in the faith that they grew up with. And so the new Calvinism is a way for young people to say, here's something that's historic, here's something that really has something I can understand and grasp, and there's a theology and a preaching that's deep and has a lot of meaning to it. And so I think that's what the new Calvinism's appeal is for young people. And I think that's why, as Lutherans, we need to get our voice out there in the same way, because we have this rich tradition, theological and historical and liturgical tradition. And I think that if more people knew that we were out there too, that we'd be drawing that same group of people, because it's exactly what they're looking for.
Tell us more about that young, restless, and reform movement.
Yeah, sure. The Young, Restless, and Reform movement, it's something that's pretty new. Its foundations, it's hard to say exactly when it started, but it started to get big probably around 2005, and it's been growing ever since. There's a number of elements involved in it, and theologically, the big issue is probably the five points of Calvinism. But the Young, Restless, and Reform movement isn't as much confessional as maybe the historic Reformed Church was. So they're getting into theology, but there's still not a lot of structure in terms of church structure. There's not a lot of really a theology of what the church is, what the sacraments are. And so it's kind of a blend of evangelicalism and aspects of Calvinism. So you have these kind of mega churches that lean Calvinistic. So you have someone like a Mark Driscoll or Matt Chandler who aren't part of any even real church body. They're just kind of their independent things, and they take aspects of evangelicalism, and they take aspects of Calvinism and kind of combine them together. And then along with this, there's all sorts of aspects of the movement. Along with the popular preachers, there's a big online presence, websites, publishing houses, and there's even, you know, a big movement in terms of Calvinistic rappers doing hip-hop music. That's been a significant part of this also.
Where would we fit? And here, kind of old school, it's remarkable to call him old school, but he is, Rick Warren, and then the new school, Stephen Furtick. Where would these two Southern Baptist congregations and pastors fit in the movement that is called the New Calvinism? Start with Rick Warren, Saddleback.
Sure. Rick Warren kind of represents. He really is the representative of the kind of Christianity that a lot of the new Calvinists are pushing against, because that's kind of the type of Christianity that appealed to the baby boomers, to that kind of generation. very pragmatic, not very theological, very focused on what we need to do for God, not what Christ has done for us. And that is really kind of the pushback is exactly against that kind of Christianity, towards something that's focused on more on Christ, on the gospel, that is more theologically driven, not driven by just preaching about how to, you know, how to be a good parent or whatever else. And then Stephen Furtick is kind of the other end of a lot of young people who are rejecting the new Calvinism. Stephen Furtick is kind of the example of the other kind of Christianity that's out there. So you've got this weird dynamic going on. I listened to recently, I never listened to Christian radio, but recently I found Moody Radio on, and I said, I'll just listen to it for the heck of it, just to see what kind of stuff people are listening to. And it was very interesting listening, because I heard completely contradictory things on the shows that we're on. And so there was somebody talking about how faith is a gift of God, it's not anything that we can do. And then they go to their commercial break, and there's someone that says we need to learn to accept Jesus in our heart. And then they have some kind of preview of some Stephen Furtick thing. So it's this weird dynamic now in evangelicalism where you have these people who are moving towards this new Calvinism, which is really big, but then there's this move toward something totally different with the likes of Stephen Furtick that's very much this decision theology, to the point where they're even manipulating people into getting baptized by having, you know, actors come in and pretend like they're going up to get baptized. So really there's this battle going on between these completely different theologies, and ultimately really one of them has to win out.
And they're all remarkably Southern Baptist. I guess that kind of raises a question. Can we even use a term or ask a question like, is the new Calvinism going to, or has it become a fellowship issue? What does fellowship even mean in that context?
Oh, well, it's hard to say what fellowship means, because Baptists in general aren't going to have a strict view of what fellowship is, what constitutes fellowship. You know, Lutherans, we have a very strictly defined view of what fellowship is, so we can have those kinds of discussions. But the Southern Baptist Convention, you know, everything is very loosely associated, because Baptists tend to be very focused on their individual congregations, not so much the broader church that they're a part of. But there are fears that this will eventually split the Southern Baptist Convention, and I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But there definitely is an issue there where certain extremes, probably on both sides of the divide, don't want anything to do with the people on the other side of the debate.
Marla in Massachusetts has a simple question. We've already talked about it, but just make it, outline it for us if you would. What are the 5 points of Calvinism that are often at the heart of the new Calvinism?
Sure. Yeah, I'll do that as briefly as I can. First, there is total depravity, which is the doctrine that man is so sinful that he cannot have faith on his own apart from God's grace. Unconditional election, that God chooses who is going to be saved unconditionally before the foundations of the world. Limited atonement, which says that Jesus died only for the elect. Irresistible grace, that says that when God gives grace, that grace is always irresistible. So whoever God gives grace to is going to be converted. And then perseverance of the saints, which is the doctrine that those who are saved, who are elect, they're going to be converted, and they're always going to persevere. There's no possibility of falling away from the faith.
Is this complicated, the new Calvinism in Baptist circles, complicated by the fact that, at least in my experience, I've discovered a lot of people who say, I'm a Calvinist, mean I'm mostly Calvinist. I'm maybe 4 points, or I'm 3 points, but not 5 points. Does that complicate it, Jordan?
It does, because some of the major figures, Bruce Ware would be a major example. He's a pretty big figure within Baptist circles, and he's a very adamant Calvinist, but he's actually only a 4-point Calvinist. So it's not even a hard, fast distinction, because you do have these people that kind of fall somewhere in the middle, say a 4-point or a 3-point or a 2-point. People are kind of all over the place on that spectrum.
It's difficult from our Lutheran perspective to look in on this, because Lutheranism can't be boiled down to points in a lot of ways. Although you can compare and contrast the points of Calvinism, it doesn't get near encompassing this. And mostly because Lutheranism is a distinctly sacramental confession of faith. What is the sacramental view of the new Calvinism? Is it more in keeping with the Baptist or with or edging toward Lutheran?
Yeah, that's something that a lot of people who are confessionally Reformed, holding to the older Reformed confessions, you know, like the Westminster Confession or the Three Forms of Unity, have spoken out against the new Calvinism specifically because they have held on to the typical Southern Baptist view of the sacraments. And so most of the people involved in the new Calvinist movement haven't really changed their view of the sacraments. They just hold to the idea that it's purely symbolic. There's no real grace that's given in the sacraments. Whereas historic Reformed theology says that there is some kind of grace given through the sacraments. So they're really not moving towards where Lutherans are on the sacraments. And I think that's probably one of the biggest flaws of the new Calvinism, is that the sacraments aren't even really studied. Because I think if people actually studied those issues, which are very important, then they would probably be more interested in Lutheranism. But since everything is focused specifically on the five points, there are some real major issues that really aren't even addressed.
I'm wondering about that brand of Calvinists that a lot of people mistake for Lutherans. I'm thinking here in terms of, for lack of a better name, Mike Horton, the California Calvinists, that kind of school of thought out there, R. Scott Clark and others, who, when you hear them talk about the sacraments, if you're not listening carefully, you might think they believe in baptismal generation. All due respect to those guys, but you might believe they believe in baptismal generation. They even believe in paedobaptism.
Yes, there's an interesting group out there because there's a broad range of people within the Reformed Church. And Westminster Seminary in California has sometimes been called crypto-Lutheran because they hold to a law-gospel distinction. They distinguish between the two kingdoms that all people live in, that Christians live in, and they also have a higher sacramental theology. So there are some similarities between us and them that you're not going to find in, you know, the new Calvinism, for example. But they're not the same. And this is important to say because I know people that are involved in the Westminster Seminary West in Escondido, that kind of theology, or people that have gone to that seminary or are there now, who try to say that kind of, well, Lutherans agree with us. We're kind of on the same page. But if you really look into it, we're not on the same page. And the issue that differentiates us really is the issue of limited atonement, because Jesus only died for the elect, and so the sacraments then can only give grace to the elect, and grace is always irresistible. So you don't have the same kind of assurance in the sacraments, even in a more sacramental Reformed tradition, because you can't really know the sacraments are for me, you know, Christ's body is given for me, because you have to know that you are the elect, and because you are elect, therefore the sacraments are going to give grace. So that's really a huge distinction, and that's really the most important distinction between where they would be and where we would be.
So one more quick question. With the rise of new Calvinism, it's not likely, in your opinion then, that we'll see Southern Baptist congregations baptizing babies anytime soon?
I would like to see that, but unfortunately, no, I don't think so. I don't think whole congregations will, but what I do think is that there are individual people who are going to find in Calvinism a more historic theology, and they are then going to take that and then start looking into theology more generally, and it will likely lead them to that position eventually.
Pastor Jordan Cooper is a convert from Calvinism to Lutheranism, pastor of Hope Lutheran Church in Brighton, Iowa, and host of a weekly podcast called Just and Sinner. You'll find a link to Just and Sinner under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Pastor Cooper, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on.
When we come back, Dr. Paul Meyer is going to join us. We're going to talk about a reported discovery of a Canaanite fortress, almost 4,000 years old in Old Jerusalem, and its significance, its nexus with the biblical narrative. Dr. Paul Meyer, Professor Emeritus of Ancient History at Western Michigan University, is our guest for the next 10 minutes of Issues, Etc.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
How would you like to attend a conference and hear Matt Harrison, Craig Parton, Jonathan Fisk, Will Wheaton, Chris Roseborough, and Al Schmidt? You're invited to the 2014 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 13th and 14th in Collinsville, Illinois. Registration is $100 per person. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 13th and 14th in Collinsville, Illinois. Issuesetc.org.
Whether vacationing in Branson or boating on Table Rock Lake, Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church in Kimberling City, Missouri is your Christ-confessing congregation. Every week, Christ comes to us through the preached word and sacraments, by which we are strengthened and kept in the one true faith. So come to where Christ comes to you. Come to Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church, 103 Kimberling Boulevard in Kimberling City, Missouri. For more, see our website at sothl.com.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Christ at the Center, The Justification of the Ungodly, A Contemporary View of Faith and Reason, The Holy Spirit in Christ. These are just some of the almost 30 essays included in Propter Christum, Christ at the Center. It's a new book of essays in honor of Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Daniel Preuss. Find out more and purchase Propter Christum at shop.logia.org. Propter Christum, Christ at the Center, shop.logia.org.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God is only $15.99. CPH.org.